Time to bring in our man Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com. Hey, Chipper, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. Sorry for, weighing in on all your discussions earlier in the day.
We need you more often. What are you apologizing for?
You're a big part of my son Bryson and I's drive to school. In fact, I imagine that there's a lot of people driving their kids to school that are listening to Dave and Sam. I wonder if your listenership drops after the first bell rings, because I know a lot of people are listening to you like I am.
Yeah, and we do appreciate it, and that's why we also try to, sometimes we get a little bit off the rails, but we try to stay as non-blue as we possibly can in the 7:30 to 8 o'clock window. So I appreciate you saying that. And yeah, you know what I'm talking about, though, with that Stegman pool where Coach Bowerly could not to show the pool to the recruits.
Do you remember it had those windows were at the top of it that like you used to have in the old manufacturing buildings, they would open, and half of them were broken, and big ugly rusty fans were spinning in the top of it,
and those rafters, it was like barracks almost. It was weird,
unbelievable. Yeah. They probably were barracks back in the day.
But hey, anyone that could sign the classes he was signing without showing them the actual facility is a heck of a recruiter right there for sure. So he went from the outhouse to the penthouse when the Ramsey Center came on. It was originally called the Space Center. And then they got a name for it, and it was called the Ramsey Center. And
Mr. Bernard Ramsey wrote a check for
that's right,
$40 million or something. I don't know.
Incredible.
He got his name on it.
Incredible. Yeah. And it's been awesome ever since. Well, Chip, we could sit here and talk about interesting stuff like UMass and non-conference schedule they play and their receiver Andy Isabella, or we could talk about non-interesting stuff like moving the Georgia-Florida game or Power 5 conferences playing Group of 5 conferences or stuff like that. I mean, this is one of those weeks where, hey, the coaches aren't looking ahead, but, well, I hope they are to an extent. Of course, they got to get ready for this game, but these are the kind of weeks where, like, this affords Kirby and the coaching staff the luxury of, maybe making sure they're still ready for Tech and starting peek ahead towards Alabama, right?
Well, let me tell you a couple of things here, DJ. Number one, coaches and players, they don't look ahead, but we do. And, in fact, as I'm sitting here right now, I'm sitting here breaking down Alabama's pass defense for, we're running a series in on Dog Nation called Road to Atlanta. So we're already in the third or fourth part of the series, breaking down every matchup that there is in the Alabama game. It's okay to look ahead. And I promise you, Kirby Smart and his staff are looking ahead. I mean, there's a couple. Number one, there's a good reason that Kirby, insisted on getting a significant boost in Georgia's support staff. I think they have well over 50 support staffers over there. Now, how many of them are actually dedicated to the coaching end of things? But they're breaking down tape. They're breaking down tendencies. They're running computer algorithms on what passes to a Tungavaloa likes to throw. They're doing all that right now. And interesting enough, I don't know if you knew this or not, DJ, but actually Georgia works all year on Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
They don't wait until the week of the Georgia Tech game to start working on that chop blocking option. They devote at least a period every practice, to working on defending the option. In fact, I saw them doing a little bit of it yesterday in the Pain Center as they were going through practice. So, certainly Kirby's focus and Jake Fromm's focus and that defensive staff's focus is on UMass this week. There's a whole lot of other people, me included, that are laser focused on Alabama right now.
Talking with Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com.
Yeah, and with that focus on Alabama, did you think that Kirby Smart is in an ideal situation in terms of how he likes to prepare and motivate his team for games, in a sense that, nobody is giving them a chance going into the SEC championship?
Oh, yeah, man. He's got motivational fodder by the dump truck load. I mean, they are Georgia's definitely going to have an advantage in that. And that's what Mike Griffith and I are doing in this series. We're just going to, you know, advantage or even, you know, on each – breaking down every phase of the game. And, you know, look, guys, as you get into this, and you know this, everybody's watched them. This Alabama team is really incredible. But the interesting thing to me is it's all relative, right? You know, and I mean, if you look at the Eastern Division's record against the West Division this year, and you look overall, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, I can promise you this, Alabama hasn't faced a team like Georgia all year, okay? Now, LSU is good. LSU is exceptional. But I think you guys, I don't know, I'd like to hear your opinion. I mean, I'm not sure LSU is necessarily a better team than Georgia. They were a better team that day, and Georgia, let's face it, you know, they went in there and spewing some oil already, and then they. I just thought it was a poorly coached, a poorly planned, strategically planned game, you know, starting with the fake field goal on. But I'm not sure that LSU is necessarily a better team than Georgia. This is going to be in a neutral site, quotes around that, you know, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I don't care what you say, it's going to have a little bit of a Georgia edge to it in the SEC championship game. And I don't think Alabama has faced, you know, we're breaking it down, pass defense, rush offense, rush defense, special teams, et cetera, et cetera. Alabama hasn't encountered anything quite the level of Georgia. So it's all relative. And I think you know, Georgia and the Bulldogs have a lot of things to be motivated about, and I think they have some things to be confident about. Now that said, I don't think the Vegas has got it wrong. You know, I mean, I think Alabama deservedly needs to be favored in this game, but there's a lot of things to figure out. You know, and Tua's still got to go through that Auburn game. I don't care what you say, it's a physical game. He's a little bit gimpy right now, and I tell you what, now, you know, you might want to favor a Georgia team facing an Alabama team without Tua. I don't think they're going to. In fact, there's been some discussion that maybe they should just sit Tua the rest of the way. I'm sure Nick Saban won't do that. But anyway, rambling a little bit. But, I mean, I you know, Georgia's got a shot in this game. It's not all or nothing here.
Hey, I totally agree. The teams are fluid just like the season is. You can play a team in September and they're better than they are when you play them in November. And I think it's vice versa there. I mean, we saw that last year where Georgia had the rough game against Auburn and then turned around and beat them in the SEC championship game. So, yeah, I mean, just because you lose to a team doesn't mean a month or 6 weeks later that you may not be better than that team. So, I mean, Georgia won't find out this year with LSU like they did last year with Auburn, but looking ahead to Alabama, yeah, I mean, they don't – I mean, they could beat Georgia by three touchdowns. I don't know. But it doesn't seem like it's as big a disparity maybe that it seemed a month ago, right?
No, it wouldn't. And if you remember, I mean, people, you know, how quickly we forget. But, I mean, you know, Alabama was – I think they were favored going into the national championship game last year. And, you know, Georgia's up 13 and at halftime should have been up three scores,
yeah,
because of because Tyler Simmons was not offside, you know. But that's a whole,
yeah,
other discussion. I don't think it's exactly Mount Everest here for Georgia. But yeah, you know, there's a lot that has to happen between now and then, and they are exceptionally good. It's really incredible. I'm breaking down the pass defense today, and so what we're doing, it's not Georgia's pass defense versus Alabama's pass offense. It's Georgia's pass defense versus Alabama's pass defense. Who has the better pass defense? And it's really similar, these two. I mean, it's amazing when you look at Alabama. They only had one player coming back in their secondary with any starting experience, and that was a redshirt junior safety. Deontay Thompson had two starts in his career. Everybody else is a new starter back there. And they lost a starting cornerback, the Diggs guy, earlier in the year. He was replaced by Patrick Surtain II, a five-star cornerback out of American Heritage, who actually played opposite on the other side of the field than Georgia's Tyson Campbell, and he's come in and done a really good job. But they're a very young secondary that, you know, hasn't faced, you know, great passing teams that you know, I think is going to get a severe test, its best test of the year, you know, against Georgia. And the converse is true as well. You know, Jake Fromm and the Bulldogs haven't encountered a secondary quite of the ilk of theirs, and maybe LSU, but not a defensive front for sure, and all of that figures into pass defense.
Chip, I wanted to ask you something about the Georgia-Florida game, because we've seen a couple of your colleagues now kind of questioning its validity being in Jacksonville. Obviously, Mike Griffith asking Kirby a few weeks ago, and then Mark Bradley had a column yesterday kind of looking at the possibility of it not being in Jacksonville down the road. What do you think has made this kind of come up again all of a sudden? I know Kirby's kind of talked about it and said that it doesn't help them in recruiting, but I mean, is this a realistic possibility of this game moving from Jacksonville? I know the contract runs up, I think, around 2021, but I mean, is this a realistic possibility?
Well, you know, a couple of things to take on there. One, yes, it's a possibility, because Georgia and Florida both smartly have limited that contract 4 years. It was actually 5 years this time. It's complicated to get into it, but it runs out in 2021. And the reason they keep the contract short is because they want to keep their leverage, you know, on staying in Jacksonville. They do give up some things to play in Jacksonville. But, you know, I read Bradley's piece and actually responded to Bradley's piece on Facebook. We're Facebook friends, and he posted there, and I responded to it there. And you know, I know you guys have had Mike Griffith on, and he's really the one who's gotten this into the public, you know, conscious, I think, because, you know, he made his first trip to Jacksonville this year, and he came away going, well, what's all the fuss? He was, you know, there was a lot of things that he thought were negative about it. But clearly, Sam, you didn't read the Tower's take on it on Dog Nation, which I wrote. I can't remember if it was last week or this week. But anyway, I talked to Greg McGarrity at length about this and some other scheduling situations. And the bottom line is this, is Georgia and Florida make $6 million a year every 2 years going down there to Jacksonville, as opposed to $2.7 million over the same. You have to do it in two-year increments because you're home and then you're away, and you're home and away. The difference in $6 million and $2.7 million, besides the math of it, is a lot. That's a lot of difference. I mean, that's not chump change. I know that they're bringing in money by the dump truck load from the SEC network and everywhere in college football, but that's not money that you know, scoff at. Oh, well, you know, that's $3.3 million or whatever it is to, you know, we don't need it. You know, that's big money. And you're not financing just football. You're financing 20 other sports besides football. So with a board of directors, a president, and an athletic director to answer to, I understand he is King Kirby, and he, you know, hates losing a recruiting weekend. But what's not discussed in there is what is the advantages that you have in playing that game there. You touched on them some earlier. I was listening, but, you know, the impact that it has on North Florida and South Georgia in terms of attention on both of these teams from a recruiting standpoint. You know, CBS is, you know, anchors its national broadcast every year the last week of October for that game in Jacksonville. That's a national broadcast that's coast to coast that you know you're going to have every year. And, you know, there's only two games like it in the United States of America, and there's not going to be any others because they're not adding any others. That's Texas, Oklahoma, and Georgia, Florida. These other ones, they have, you know, brief little neutral site deals where they're playing in Dallas or whatever, like I guess Arkansas and Texas A&M are doing. But those all have limited shelf lives. So it may change. But, you know, all that said, I mean, I'm not – if Kirby wins a national championship this year or next year, you know, he might get whatever he wants. And then Georgia – might change his mind about it. But here's the last thing that I'll talk about. The whole thing about that Florida has an advantage because they're, you know, I hear people say they're 30 minutes away. No, they're 80 miles away, okay? It's 80 miles. They have to come by bus. It takes, that's a long drive. Georgia flying out of Ben Epps Airport and going directly to their hotel, which is in downtown Jacksonville now, actually covers less time than it does for Florida to get. And that's because Georgia has arranged it that way. Georgia Georgia has said, we're only going to continue with this series if you make everything even as it possibly can be. So I personally don't think it's going to change anytime soon. I think it's too sweet a deal. And as you just talked about, all of this will be brought up for discussion before the 21 contract expires. Well, what does that mean? Is the pot going to get lighter? No, it'll get richer. They'll keep taking care of Georgia because of the economic impact that Georgia, more than Florida, brings to that region of the country with all those people who come down and rent condominiums for the week and spend all that money in the greater Jacksonville area. It's worth it for them. It's $6 million now. I imagine it'll be $8, $10 million next time.
Well, I guess that's the thing that has to be weighed out with it is if that game does continue to be played in Jacksonville every year. And as I said earlier, I see both sides, so it's not where I'm passionate about it one way or the other. But there's just going to be some other seasons where the schedule's going to be a little bit limited of what you can do for your non-conference games, and that's just something that you have to accept if the Georgia-Florida game's going to be in Jacksonville every year.
Yeah, listen, you know, the people of Athens, certainly Athens Chamber of Commerce and all that would love for Georgia to do this because they lose the economic impact
right.
in Athens every other year, you know, and that's a boon. I mean, that's huge. When Georgia has a home game, you have such a limited number of them anyway, not to mention that most of the home game now, they are crap, you know. I mean, that's just the reality. I love to see Georgia coming up with these home and homes with Texas and Clemson. I'm also cynical about it, though. That's 10 years out, and odds are I bet one or both of those don't end up happening because I expect before we get to that, there'll probably be a ninth game added in SEC play, and if not, and I wouldn't be surprised if the college football playoff gets reset, extended, expanded. I expect it to go to eight teams eventually. So, I mean, that's great. Looks good on paper. Home and home with Texas, home and home with Clemson, that's great. We'll see if they happen or not.
Talking with Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com.
And, Chip, obviously – I didn't want to get out of here without, you know, at least I know we talked a little bit about not looking past UMass, but is there any particular, you know, thing to worry about with this other than, you know, the sleepwalking kind of element of a game like this?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's look, you know, here's the line is unbelievable and probably, you know, pretty accurate. You guys see that better than anybody else with your picks you do every week. It's amazing how those guys in Vegas do it. They're pretty good at what they do. But I think the good thing about this team, not necessarily going into Georgia Tech, but they throw the ball around. They throw it well. They throw it a lot. Y'all have, I'm sure, talked a little bit about Andy Isabella, you know, the leading receiver in the country. Little guy, really fast, runs a lot of quick stuff and really can do a lot of things with the ball in his hands. That's going to be great for Georgia's secondary. Like I said, not necessarily for Georgia Tech. And look, that's a whole other ball of wax. I know you, Dave. I can hear Jeff Danzler right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Georgia Tech game, it looms. It's always there. And, you know, Georgia can lose that game anytime. But in terms of getting ready for that SEC championship game, which is going to happen regardless of anything else that happens this season, this will be, you know, somewhat good preparation for, you know, the ball is going to be in the air a lot. You know, they're going to be throwing it around a lot. I mean, you know, there's not going to be any Tua at quarterback. There's not going to be a five All-Americans on the offensive line like Alabama has. But I think it'll be good preparation and a good game. But, again, I come back to the scheduling thing. You know, so we get to see UMass, you know, Austin Peay and Middle Tennessee State in Sanford Stadium this year. And there's so many limited opportunities. You know, hooray, great. I think that's part of the problem facing college football in particular. And guys, we don't offer a donation to get our tickets. We get in free. But imagine these people who are given, you know, $25,000 over 5 years to be in the McGill Society and get their tickets for home games, and that's half of what they get to see those three teams. You know, I think that's a problem that Georgia and everybody in college football is facing right now. And if it continues, you're going to see more and more people sitting at home watching on the 55-inch flat screen rather than bothering to come to the stadium.
Hey, and that 25 grand, that still doesn't buy the tickets. You still got to buy the tickets on top of that. That's the funny thing. Yeah.
No, it's big, big money, and I don't know why they put up with it. I mean, if I'm giving all that money, and I'm, you know, and George is whining and dining me and the McGill Society and putting me on flights to New Orleans and you know, rubbing my feet and rubbing my back and everything else, I'd say, hey, you know what? Quit giving us this crap. How about going out there and scheduling some real games, for my money? And I think that's why, you know, you're seeing some of these pop on the schedule. Slowly but surely, they got to take care of that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what I was alluding to a moment ago about if the Georgia-Florida game is going to stay in Jacksonville, it limits a little bit the opportunities on not just – I mean, Florida's in the exact same boat that Georgia is. Both schools will have, you know, limited scheduling opportunities every other year because they're giving up one of their home games. So it does make a difference.
You know what's not discussed here, David, is the 42,000 Georgia fans that like going down there, okay?
Yeah.
You know, and those 42,000 – Georgia fans that like going down there are the ones who are stroking most of the big checks. Because I think for the Florida game this year, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to think of what the cutoff was on earning your tickets through donations, but it's pretty high.
Yeah.
So those are movers and shakers that are getting the tickets down there, and they enjoy staying in the condominiums down on Jekyll and St. Simons and Amelia Island. Yeah, we love having that game down there in Jacksonville, you know. So, we'll see. It's a great discussion, and like I said, if Kirby is passionate about it and continues to lead this program the direction it's going, and that's what he wants. It's like the warden from Cool Hand Luke said, you know, he wants it. Well, he gets it. That might happen.
There you go. I love it. We're going to end with some Cool Hand Luke. That's what we're going to do. That's good stuff. Chip, we love our chats with you every week. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you Saturday.
All right. See you on the other side.
All right. Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com.